The message is no pain, no gain. So it's not going to be a workout message. We're not going to be talking about how to get muscle. But, you know, and it's funny, as I was preparing the message, I was realizing this is like, you know, each of us has kind of our core beliefs. You know, we have these things we kind of come back with. This is just mine. I mean, through and through, this is in me, this idea of difficulty, pain. And so, as a result, that's what you get. So this picture, obviously, I love the picture because I think the dude's a stud. I mean, I just like, you know, he's got a nice body, you know, and all that. I think he's ripped. But understand, and all of us understand this, that when it comes to physical fitness, when it comes to having muscles, you have to go through pain, right? Nobody would deny that. You can't just like, hey, I want to look like Arnold Schwarzenegger, and I hope it happens someday, right? Nobody would ever even have that line of reasoning, right? You would understand that you're going to need to take you need to go to the gym. That's so rude. That was so rude. I think Arnold Schwarzenegger's awesome. So, but to be really big, to be really strong, to be really muscular, you have to go through pain, right? You got to do push-ups and sit-ups and pull-ups and dips and da-da-da-da. And nobody would ever deny that fact. What's funny, though, is that same principle applies to every area of life. There's not an area in your life, in my life, that you can mention that doesn't require pain in order to get gain. Not a single area. And yet, we don't apply the same logic. So you would be kind of weird to say, I want to look like Arnold Schwarzenegger, but I don't think I have to really do anything, and I definitely am not willing to go through any kind of pain or struggle or difficulty. You would never say that because you know it's absurd. And yet, we say it every day in virtually every other area of our life. We spiritualize it, right? So we flower and put all kinds of pretty words around it. Well, I'm just waiting on the Lord, and I'm trusting in the Lord. But really what that is, it's AKA, I am really not going to press in to the thing I need to press into because it's too painful. So I'm going to wait. Or I'm just praying, but prayer without action is worthless and useless, according to James. So really what the whole idea that I'm wanting to flesh out is this idea that pain is the process, is the path towards gain. Not just in getting muscles like this, but in every single area. And so Jesus says it way better than my little, you know, picture here. And it's in Matthew 7:14. And I'm using the Living Translation because it just gets at it. I like the wording. But the gateway to life is very narrow, and the road is difficult, and only a few ever find it. I'm gonna read it one more time. But the gateway to life is very narrow, and the road is difficult, and only a few ever find it. So, to be clear, what Jesus is referring to isn't some simple prayer you say and you get to go to heaven, and only a few people say that prayer. That's not what he's saying. It's not in the context of what he's saying. It's not in the surrounding chapters of what he's saying. Read Matthew 6, read Matthew 7, and you see really what he's getting at, and what he's talking about is the blessed life. What he's talking about is how to have life. So this word in the Greek is zoe. Zoe is the most pregnant, powerful way you can say the word life. It's like the life of God. How can you and I enter in to life? Well, unfortunately, what many of us have been told is pray this prayer, take this step, do this thing, and you will have life. And it's really, sometimes a partial truth is worse than no truth, because the partial truth leads you to disappointment. And so what ends up happening is we think that praying the prayer of, Jesus, I want to have a relationship with you, is the answer to having life. And guess what? It's not. Because what this is saying is it's talking about a lifestyle. It's talking about a whole approach. It's talking about a whole mindset. And the mindset is this. Know this, people, that if you want life, the way there, the path is going to be difficult, which if you flesh out what that Greek word means, it's a crazy, uncomfortable word. It talks about pressure. It's squeezing. It's difficulty. It's discomfort. And if you're like me, which you are, because you live in the West, you don't like discomfort. You like to be comfortable. In fact, we have a multi-billion dollar industry, and I could multiply the industry, all these different industries that are built on one premise. You know what that premise is? Avoiding pain. So what's an industry that's completely built around avoiding pain? Give me an example. Boom! That's the easy one, right? Pharmaceuticals. But what we don't realize is how many cousins and sisters and brothers of the pharmaceuticals there are out there that their whole basis is helping us escape pain. So I'm not going to pick too much on stuff because it's not all bad. Are pharmaceuticals evil? Of course not. Is Facebook evil? No. But it's just like the pharmaceuticals for so many of us, right? So what we do is we're bored. And as Pascal said, the problem with all of humanity is man and woman. Man is afraid to be alone in the room and be quiet. What does that mean? We're afraid of pain. That's what that means. We're afraid to be quiet. We're afraid to sit in our house, in our apartment, in our, wherever we're at, and just be quiet. So much easier to get this and just kind of, right, scroll on through, just read. Oh, yeah. Now, here's what I would say. Whether it's that or whether it's the plethora, and I love, like, Netflix. I mean, I love it. Like, my kids and I have all these shows. I mean, so I'm not anti-Facebook. I'm not anti-pharmaceuticals. I'm not anti-any of this, right? It's understanding how we're using it and if we're avoiding pain as a result of it. Kind of rephrasing what Jesus is saying here is the life you want, the life you really want, is down a path of pain, difficulty, suffering, squeezing, and pressure. How good does that sound? Doesn't sound very good until we start reframing how we understand pain and difficulty, suffering, struggle. When you start to reframe it, you actually stop avoiding pain and you start leaning into pain. So let me give you a random example that I think really does apply, but it'll take you a second probably to follow my logic. So I was at my son's middle school, and they asked me to present. I'm a CEO of a company, and so they wanted some CEOs to come in and present to the middle schoolers. So I presented to the sixth graders, then they left. Seventh graders, then they left. Eighth graders. It was really neat. It was neat to do it and this and that. But one of the things that I recognized, and it was so strong, I literally almost spoke to it, although it had nothing to do with my presentation. And what I noticed was the difference between the sixth grade heart and the seventh grade heart and the eighth grade heart. And I don't know if you know where I'm going, but what I noticed is you had sixth graders who were kind of, you know, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and, you know, smiling and fresh and pure and sweet and innocent, and seventh graders, a marked difference, just a little more closed, a little more just reserved, a little more hard, right? Eighth graders, even more so. I mean, it was just like, it was stark, the difference. Why is that? Because they're getting older and they're maturing and that's the natural progression of life? No. Why is that? Because of pain. Anybody been to middle school? Middle school's a painful time. Right? Incredibly painful time. You go from elementary, which not to say elementary isn't painful, but you go from elementary, which is relatively safe. You move into middle school, and what kicks in? There's a big word that starts with C and ends with ES. Clicks, right? There's something with a human, I don't know how it all works. I haven't studied it. I don't really care. But here's what I know is real, is you have these clicks, and you have all of a sudden groups, and you have the ins and the outs, and popularity really becomes, like, it matters. Like, I'm watching my fourth grade son versus my sixth grade son, and the differences are stark in terms of what they have to think about. What do they have to think about? My son just thinks about having fun. My other son has to think about popularity and who's in, who's out, all this kind of stuff, and all of them do. And I'm in the class settings, and I'm in different settings where I'm watching the kids, and it's just, there's so much pain. that increases in intensity, and you're out and you're in, you're made fun of and you're laughed, and you're skinny and you're tall, you're fat, you're ugly, you're this or that, whatever it is that you are, gets like a spotlight put on it. And so there's all this pain. And as a result of the pain, for many of the kids, there's a hardening of their hearts. And guess what? That doesn't just go away. So many of us in here still have pain from middle school, guaranteed. But what my point in bringing it up is it starts really early on, pain. Pain is inevitable for every single one of us. Pain is a guarantee in life. Are you born? Are you breathing? You will experience pain. So the whole point of the message isn't, are you going to experience pain? Or you might, no, you're going to experience pain. So boiling down what I'm wanting to communicate is simply this. What are you going to do with the pain? Because pain is inevitable. Gain is an option. So what you do with the pain is completely 100% up to you. Whether you experience pain often has nothing to do with your choices. Sometimes it does. You know, smoking a bunch of joints or something, and you know, that's going to have, there's going to be results of that, right? But pain is not an option. I'll choose pain. Now I'm not going to, this life, this year, I'm not going to have any pain. That's not within your control. But what you do with the pain, and whether the pain turns to blessing and benefit and Zoe, life, that's the optional part that I'm hoping I can help you unpack, change a little bit of your thinking, and take some new actions. If you read through the scripture, give me any story. I mean, literally, you can't name a story in the scripture that isn't full of pain. You can't name a person, unless it's like a little statement in a sentence, like, you know, but there's not a specific character in the Bible that's given any kind of length that doesn't, that whose life is not full of pain. Not a single one. I would actually challenge, not that I want to take like multiple minutes to do this, but I don't think there's actually a blessing that can be mentioned that in your life, any of your lives, you can mention anything good, throw it out. And I'll tell you, the path to that is pain. So let's just try it. Let's just see if this works. Try to stump me. Give me a good thing in your life or in somebody else's life for that matter. Just throw something out, and you may not even believe it, but throw something out and I'll show you how the path to it is pain. Can somebody throw just anything good, a blessing, some good aspect of life? Marriage. Oh man, that's like you just teed it up. I mean, that's like a slow pitch. I'm just like, here we go. So marriage, this is a beautiful, and here's a beautiful thing that God has given as a gift, incredible gift. But what we're not given the tools to realize is that marriage, happy marriage, a good marriage, doesn't just, like Arnold Schwarzenegger, remember when I was referring to that? Doesn't just what? Happen. And yet we expect, because our culture feeds the garbage to us, that a good marriage is easy. It's natural. It just happens. And it's the furthest thing from the truth, right? A good marriage requires so much pain and struggle. I don't care if your parents were angels and they were awesome, which most of our parents weren't because they were broken just like we are. But if you have really good parents, and I've interviewed and I've met with and I've worked with so many different people, and I'm really a student. I love just finding out people's backgrounds, and it doesn't matter where you've come from, doesn't matter how great you were set up or how bad you were set up, marriage, to have a good marriage is, can you keep that scripture up the whole time actually? The gateway is very narrow. The gateway to what? Life, Zoe, specifically within your marriage or any relationship for that matter. How about being a parent? How about just being a brother or a sister or a friend? It is a painful process if you want to experience life in that thing. If you don't want to experience life, if you want your marriage to be kind of average or just kind of roommates that live together, or you want your children to really grow up in a normal way in our culture, here's how it works. When your son or daughter is 12 or 13 or 14, you know what they start doing with their parent? They start distancing with their parent. Why? Because it's so hard to make that transition between a young daughter or a young son, who then is now becoming a young man or a young daughter, a young woman. That's super difficult. And you have to like work it out. And it's painful. And so what we tend to do instead is we back away from the pain of that marriage, of that son, of that roommate, of that father in our life, whatever it is, because it's too painful. We don't realize that pain is the path to Zoe life in that thing. See, when we begin to embrace pain as a good thing, we don't fear it anymore. So I've got a person who works in my company. His name is Ronnie Coder. Some of you guys know who he is. He's from Iraq. He's a refugee. He was a refugee. He was running from Al-Qaeda, literally, had gotten shot. I won't go into his whole testimony because it's incredible. But he lives here now and is a U.S. citizen, and all that's awesome. He is the happiest person that I know, and he's the person in our company that whenever we have a problem, we just say, Ronnie, here's the problem. Here's the situation. And he handles it. And his favorite phrase, I mean, he says it every single day, no exaggeration, often multiple times a day. And the phrase is, life is easy. Which would seem really contradictory to the whole message I'm bringing. But it's totally not. Here's the beauty of this man named Ronnie. Ronnie looks at every situation, no matter how big and difficult and hard it is, as I'm gonna run right into that thing, and I'm gonna conquer that thing, and I'm gonna come out on the other side of that thing victorious. That's just his whole mindset. How? Why? Let me tell you exactly why. He grew up at 6, 7, and 8. He was smuggling guns across the border of Iraq and Iran with his grandpa. If I could tell you the stories of what he went through and what he experienced and what he saw, difficulty in hardship, he grew up on it. It was like us watching cartoons. We grew up and watching cartoons. He grew up in pain and difficulty and struggle. So for him, this is easy. It's all easy. It doesn't matter what it is because does this make sense? Like he had gone through so much difficulty that that's the lens. He just says life is hard, but because he's pressed into it, now life is easy. There's nothing that he's afraid of. Literally, I'm serious. There's nothing he's afraid of. Why? Because he's understood this principle. Now us, I'll just say us in this room, I'm gonna include you with me, we have a different take. We see pain and we see difficulty and it scares us. We don't want to press into a hard relationship, a hard job, we don't want to press into it. Our emotions when they're up and we're dealing with anger or lust or jealousy or bitterness or unforgiveness or rejection, pressing into it is the opposite of what we want to do. We want to back away from it and so we stay stunted. Pain is the path towards gain. Otherwise stated, Zoe life. Every room or every person in this room's life is full of pain. I don't know many of you. I don't know your stories, most of you. I know, just like my life, your life is full of pain. And let me just say this. A popular notion, and it's getting to be more and more popular, not notion, maybe it's a philosophy of life, that if I had a toilet right here just to illustrate how bad it is, I would say, I don't want to get too graphic. It's garbage. This philosophy of life is garbage. And here's the philosophy of life. Everything happens, can you finish it for me? For a reason. Garbage. Absolute garbage. Let me tell you what that philosophy of life is rooted in. It's rooted in a first world perspective. You know what I mean by that, right? First world. Privileged, okay? People who are privileged can have that philosophy of life. So you live in first world, meaning you have a house over your head, you have shoes on your feet, you have food, you're not starving, you're not being raped, you're not in slavery, you're not an orphan. So when you're not in those situations, it's easy to say everything happens for a reason. However, when you look at the 25 million orphans in India, or the million plus sex slaves who will live, be born into it, and die in that state, tell me how that phrase and that philosophy of life works for them. I'm not saying, what I'm saying is there's no redemption in the lives of millions of these people. And that may rock you, like thinking about that, but it's the reality of it. And so what you have is you have pain all over the world, including in this city, including in this room, that's completely unredemptive. Struggle and trial and difficulty that does not have any redemption. So everything does not happen for, well, let me restate it, actually. What people mean by that, everything happens for a reason, is, you know, it's going to all work out. That's what they mean. Because the reality is, everything does happen for a reason. Usually it's because there's evil. And if you don't think there's evil, just begin to study the realities of what's happening in the world. Or because of people's greed, envy, jealousy, bitterness, unforgiveness, right? There is a reason why everything happens. But it's not because everything works out. Because everything doesn't work out. In fact, every one of us in this room, could each of you give plenty of examples of things that aren't working out, that haven't worked out. Now, before you think I'm like diving off the cliff into this, you know, utter abyss of hopelessness, the reality is the scripture is very clear in Romans. It says that all things work together for good to those who are called according to his purpose. In other words, those who are engaging in a vital connection with God in the midst of difficulty and struggle and trial, God really does turn and cause things to work together for good. But it's not autopilot button that you just hit and you kick back and everything is going to work out. It will not work out. So for us in this room, what I want to kind of go into is I'm kind of unpacked a little bit of the false thinking, but what I want us to be thinking about is, if the path towards blessing and gain to Zoe life is pain, how do we begin to engage in it more fully? How do we begin to press into it more fully? And why should we? So one of the big whys, at least for me, and I think this applies to most people, is I really want to be a blessing to other people. Like, I really want to help other people. I think that's in our human nature, unless it's totally so jaded and so guarded and so hurt. But I think most of us legitimately want to help other people. In fact, if I had everybody raise their hand, it'd be embarrassing not to raise your hand if you didn't agree with this. But I would guess actually everybody would really raise your hand if I said, how many of you really want to make a difference in the lives of other people? I think every single hand would go up. The problem is, most of us, and again, I'm kind of being a little bit harsh here, most of us aren't making jack squat of a difference. And the reason we're not making jack squat of a difference is because we are literally, to use a swimming analogy, we have the water up to our, you know, chin and we're barely staying afloat. And so we can barely keep our head above water. And how in the world are we going to help somebody else when we're going to drown? We're almost drowning ourselves. Our inner world, whether it's just our own inner state of being or our outer world, our finances or our relationships or whatever it is, we're just in survival mode. We're in survival mode. And so as a result of that, we just don't have much to give. Does that make sense? When you're barely afloat yourself, you cannot help somebody else. But the whole Genesis 12 blessing that God is desiring to bring to every single one of us, the Genesis 12 blessing, in essence, says this: my desire for those that want to receive it from me, I want to bless you so that you can be a blessing. Now, for me, for many years, I mean, I could quote that verse. I loved that verse. But I never connected that verse to meaning this. To receive my blessing means you need to walk down the difficult, narrow, hard, pressure-filled. That's the way to receive God's blessing, is walk through difficulty and pain, and as a result of being willing to walk through that, blessing is going to come on the other side, and your inner life is going to begin to stabilize, your outer life is going to begin to stabilize, and guess what you can begin doing? You can begin helping other people. So I would like to give examples. You know, I'm going to give one. So I've been talking for over 10 years. I don't know the exact time I really was really getting passionate about it. It was at least 10 years ago. I've been talking about wanting to do something about orphans, as many people do. Guess what I did? I mean, let me restate. I mean, I sent a check here and there because, you know, it was easy to do, and I did that. But in terms of really being able to do something, I wasn't able to do anything. Why? Because I was just getting by. I was in survival mode. Well, over the course of about the last 7 or 8 years, I've had a series of a lot of painful experiences that by God's orchestration, through his word, I've learned a lot of things. And this, remember what I said about my life message? No pain, no gain, really is kind of a life message through what I've gone through over the last 7 years. And what's happened as a result of it is I'm finding in every area of my life where there was disorder and chaos and pain and just not good pain, just unredemptive pain, things are beginning to stabilize, get rooted and grounded and solid. And so what's happening is I have capacity to begin helping. So my company, and this isn't to like elevate me or my company at all, but my company, we just this last year, we are able, as a result of the blessing of God in our company, we're supporting a full orphanage in Kalimpong, India. So there's like 23 kids, the parents, all the workers, all their food, all their housing, all their electricity, all their schoolwork, everything. We completely pay for it. So what is that? That's a blessing to me, to be able to be a blessing. But I've been talking about it for 10 years. And now sometimes it takes 10 years, and that's fine. But unfortunately, some of us have been talking, and there's other things I've been talking about for 20 years and still haven't seen it happen. Why? Here's what I would say. I wasn't willing to press into the pain. I wasn't willing to do the hard work in many different areas that were required in order to be able to start seeing the blessing come. So a few more, I'm going to hold off on other examples. I already talked about our inner life and our outer life. So I already talked about changing our thinking. Last thing, just in wrapping up, I want to talk about, and this is actually the most important, is in changing our actions. So our thinking is one thing, but our actions is really as important, in some ways more important than our thinking. And you can argue it goes both ways. It actually does. Your thinking can change your actions, and your actions can actually change your thinking. So what I, the quick illustration of an action that needs to be changed is, well, let me back up. What we need to change is we need to start pushing ourselves and asking other people to push us into pain, into difficulty. And let me be clear. I'm not advocating cancer and weird things like that. Like, oh, God's going to put something like that on you, or you need to just... I'm not advocating any of that. I'm talking really more... Primarily what I'm talking about as it relates to pain is inner world stuff. What do I mean by that? Fear, because you're afraid to stand up at work and do what you need to do. Anger, that you're afraid to deal with because you want to keep blaming the person that offended you. Unforgiveness, that you're not willing to actually go after because you feel so justified based upon what that person said, did, all that. Financial just chaos, but it's really a result of this need to be something more than you are because you're full of envy and jealousy, and so you're always spending money and trying to fill the void. I'm talking about inner world stuff, really is what I'm talking about. Just to be clear, I'm not talking about getting weird and like pressing into weird pain. I'm talking about really your inner world. Not avoiding the pain of our soul, because that's really where the real pain is. Not avoiding that, but pressing into that. And as a result of pressing into that, stuff begins to happen that's good. Rather than being on the constant recycle train of things happening over and over and over, starting to break those cycles. So we need to push ourselves into pain, and sometimes even more importantly, we need other people, just a few people in our lives that can speak to us and say, listen, you need to lean into that. Listen, you got to stop getting so angry about that situation and find out what is it in you. We need truth tellers around us. And truth be told, many of us don't have a single one. Not because we don't have close people around us, but we haven't given the invitation. And nobody wants to give truth to somebody who rejects it and resists it. And we got to start inviting people to be truth tellers, to be pushers in our lives. We got to start inviting people and listen, if you see something in me, if you see a way that I'm acting or where I'm not really leaning, would you start telling me? We need it. Illustration of it is coaching. So I'm an assistant coach with my son's basketball team, and the head coach is he's a screamer. And I mean that for everything that that word means. He is a screamer, and I love it. I would never have told you that I loved it, but I love it, and here's why. What he's doing with these sixth grade boys is he is pushing them past what their natural inclination, mindset, and ability is. He screams at them. He screams at them individually. He screams at them together. He pushes them. They're sweating. They're trying. They're being pushed to the edge. And I'm right there with them just watching and just kind of taking it in, really. And here's what I've watched. A sixth grade team at the beginning of the year. It's a travel basketball, so it's very competitive. But a sixth grade team that was very average at best, that now we're going to go into a tournament in about a week and a half, 2 weeks. We can hang. We can win the tournament. I don't know if we will. We can win it. And it's for one reason. Because they were pushed. Twice a week in practice and twice a week in games. And some parents don't like him because he's a screamer. Dude like almost blows his vocal cords sometimes. He's just like, rah! But he loves the kids. So that's a huge side point. I have no issue with his screaming because he loves the kids. But he's not afraid to scream. He's not afraid to get up in their face and tell them what they're doing wrong and why they can do better. And here's the other piece to it. He believes in them. He believes in what they can become, what they can accomplish. And so he's willing to look crazy to other parents when he's at a game screaming at these little sixth graders. He'll do it. And they are better because of it. And I'm watching these kids gel, and I'm watching my son, you know, just flourish. And it's a beautiful illustration. And this came to me probably a month ago or longer. I mean, the league has been going for maybe 3 months. I was realizing, these sixth graders, it's obvious they need a coach. But guess what? I need a coach that sometimes will scream at me. Now, you might have a different temperament. And, you know, I know there's a difference between masculine and feminine. I don't know how all that works. But maybe you'll need someone screaming at you. But you need somebody up in your face to some degree. I'm telling you, you do. Because we just don't push ourselves to the degree that someone else knows we can be pushed. And so they'll push us beyond what we're willing to be pushed. And then we'll thank them for it because of what we've been able to see happen as a result of pushing into the pain and the difficulty and the struggle. So action one there is just get someone, one person, two people, invite them to start speaking into your life. And then last thing is, and I've kind of been touching this a little bit, but it is just fostering this vital, not religious, vital living relationship with Jesus in the midst of your pain. Learn to embrace the pain. Remember, we're talking primarily inner. Embrace it, not as a, you know, solo, I'm going to do this on my own, I'm a beast, I can do it. No, you can't. You're weak, you're miserable, you have no clue, you're going to, you know, you can't. However, if we embrace the pain with Jesus, and I don't mean that in any religious way, I don't care what your total understanding of Jesus is. And here's another quick side story. I'm going to this Rolfer. Rolfing is like this kind of physical therapy / massage / chiropractic / all these things mixed into one. So it's 10 sessions. And over the course of these 10 sessions, my Rolfer just started asking me questions about my life, and I was sharing them with her and da-da-da. And long story short, she started asking me about Jesus. And she's not religious, doesn't have any background. So I just started talking to her about what me and Jesus looks like. And she was interested. What I didn't have her do, now this may be offensive, I didn't have her pray some prayer about, you know, Jesus, invite Jesus into your heart. Do I believe in being that? Yes. But that's not what she was understanding. She just wanted to encounter what I was talking about. And I said, listen, Jesus wants to meet you in the midst of your pain. So it's my life message, right? So pain was coming up in this conversation. Jesus wants to meet you in the midst of your pain. Next time you're feeling that, just invite Jesus into it. That's all I said. All right. Guess what she did? She did it. Guess what she told me when we got back together? It works. Now, would she consider herself born again? And I don't think so, actually. Not yet. But that's not the point. The point is to introduce her to a living relationship with Jesus. The point is to introduce me and you. I don't care how long you've been following Jesus, how long you've been this or that. It doesn't make any difference. Today, are you inviting Jesus into your pain? Because this statement, this phrase that he made, narrow and difficult is the path, is the gateway which leads to life. That path and that gateway, you will not be able to, number one, stay on. And secondly, find, usually, without Jesus. So today, when you leave this place, every one of you is going to experience pain. Everyone, and what I mean by that is you're going to get triggered. Your emotions are going to get triggered up. Someone's going to make you upset and jealous, angry, envious. You're going to judge them because whatever. Something's going to happen. Invite Jesus into it. It's one of my primary practices. I do it on a multiple time a day basis. And depending on how, you know, jacked up I am on any particular day, I'm doing it, you know, hour by hour. But I'm inviting Jesus into my heart, into my emotional state of being. And what I want to just leave you with this, if you remember nothing else of anything I've said, pain's inevitable. Your response to the pain is your choice. Just simply begin inviting Jesus into whatever the pain looks like for you. Just simply, it's an invitation. Jesus, it's literally like this. Jesus, this is what I said to this lady. This is what she did. This is what I do all the time. Jesus, I invite you into this place. And I call it a place. I'm visually thinking and feeling the place. I'm feeling rejected. I'm feeling embarrassed. I'm feeling ashamed. I'm feeling whatever it is. Jesus, I invite you into this place. Sometimes I'll put my hands in that place wherever I feel it. And it just works. Now, does it make it everything better and you're dun-da-da-dun and all? No. It's not like zero hero. It's a process. Multiple steps, but I'm telling you, and I don't have time because I'm over time. There are so many different areas where I've done that on a consistent basis, and it's just gone now. An issue that it is, Jesus, I'm inviting you into this pain. So that's your option, or run from it. But I'm telling you, that's no good. Over there is no good. Embrace the pain. Lean into the pain. Lean into the squeeze, the difficulty, the struggle, and you're going to find Zoe life on the other side of it. Amen? All right. Let me close with prayer. Father, thank you for the reality that you are here, you're with us. Thank you that you really do make life different when we're engaging with you. And so, Father, I'm asking for every single person to be able to experience your reality in the midst of their pain. They could experience your presence, your healing, your peace, even if just a measure, that they would, each person, Lord, I'm asking, would be able to feel the reality of you in the midst of their struggle, in the midst of their trial, as they invite you into it. I bless each of you in the strong name of Jesus. Have a wonderful day.